Welcome to the Blackout Show, presented by The Guillen Grid, a show about the Chicago White Sox baseball, the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll debate what's working and what's not on the south side of Chicago. It's old school versus new school baseball. And most importantly, we're keeping all the receipts.
What is up, everybody? It is Gonzo with my fellow comrades, OJ and Jay, joined by Ray the Barber and Eric Suited Fours on Twitter. These boys are from Ray Juke Joint Sports Network. And they're not new to our platform because I think we've had them on a live game feed before. We've had them on several shows, but
I miss those days.
We are coming back. Ending season three tonight, and I can't wait to get into discussion because we have a full roundtable of topics. And first being is on Twitter this morning, Joe Doyle of Over the Slot wrote an article explaining that Alabama shortstop Justin LeBron is going to end up being the number one pick in the 2026 draft. And he explained it as basically essentially if Justin steps up from because saying that he regressed last year, but if he steps up and has a progression this season, that it should give Rock competition at one. I'll let you guys respond.
Well, I'm a fan of Justin LeBron. First of all, let me just say what's up to Eric, a.k.a. Big Computer. We got Ray, the Barber, Unc, and Gonzo. I'm not going to lie. I'm happy to see Ozzie Guillen Jr. here because there's a lot of stuff that's been going on with the promise of the team. I want to get his perspective too. So I'm kind of fanned out right now. I got some of my best internet guys, but Justin LeBron absolutely deserves to be in the competition, to be honest with you. Very toolsy, 6'2", 180, athletic, lean. You want to have that in the infield. Like, to be honest, when I was on Twitter and I saw that, I was like, okay, I'm glad somebody's publicly talking about it because if you get caught up with White Sox talk, correct me if I'm wrong, boys, but Rock been the consensus number one since we found out we had him. So I'm thinking, my instant reaction was absolutely, he deserved it. I mean, we got Ray's Duke joining in here. I can't wait to hear their opinion on it. Ray, I mean, what came to your mind when you seen that?
Well, thank you guys for having me. First of all, let me do that. Appreciate you guys having me on the platform. Thank you guys for inviting the Juke Joint here to join you guys on the Blackout Show. Really do appreciate that. And just the Justin LeBron thing, I think that it goes back to the old thing of, do you trust college players to come in and produce? Or do you go with the young guy, right, the high schooler that's toolsy, as Justin just said? And I think that a lot of people go back and forth with that. But for me, I'll wait till we get to the next part about it. But the Freudian slip that happened from the GM, I think that solidified it for me. I think that
what's that?
That means that you subconsciously know things and you say them without thinking. And he said something on a podcast about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he just let it slip. And it was pretty funny, but that told me everything I need to know. But at the end of the day, I just think that, this is kind of a segue because I know how Eric thinks. This is a segue. This is about the 2026 White Sox, and then the 2027 White Sox, and the the layering, the competition, right? Yeah. What happens from this year in the minors to next year in the minors as we start to open our window? Right, Eric? Is that how you're thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a couple things. Like, one, obviously I respect Doyle's work, but I mean, also two, in order to spice up the draft, you got to kind of come up with something. I would say Rock, to Justin's point, Rock was the number one pick during the middle of last year while they were still playing, way before the White Sox got him. I mean, he's been a consistent number one in this draft for a long time coming. And the White Sox draft history, that could be its own show in itself from way back. So, I mean, they can't afford to miss with this pick. You know, you talked about the regression a little bit, Gonzo, of last year. Even if he shows up, something's going to have to happen to Rock, in my opinion, for them to take that chance and that risk here. Like, they can't miss with this pick, in my opinion.
What you got, OJ?
You know what? You go with the best player on the draft board, and everybody's saying it's this kid. I don't know. I've never scouted him. I'm just going like what everybody's talking about, the marketing. I think it'll be very surprising for them to go with someone that's not him just because of the amount of hype and just eyes, you know, the next great baseball player. And if you miss on a player like that, then everyone else was going to miss. You know, if you go away from Rock and you draft somebody that's not Rock and Rock ends up being a superstar, trust me, they will come after you because this is a kid that can't miss.
Is this a Patrick Mahomes situation? Even though Pat wasn't the consensus number one, I'm just saying as far as like.
Well, it could be. I'm just saying
if you're a talent being overlooked.
I don't think in a couple years that I've had so many people say that this is the guy since like A-Rod. You know, this is like every scout is like he's number one. He's number one. So I don't know if he's going to be ready next year or 2028 or 2029. You have to take him. You know, he's like Josh Hamilton. Like every team says that he is a guy. They don't know what position he's going to play. They don't know, but they think that he has the, you know, the ability to be, you know, a player that's going to change, you know, a franchise's history. So you have to go with him because if you don't go with him, you're risking a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's not worth it. You know, why not go with a guy that everybody else wants? You got the first pick, you know, go with him.
And before Chuck did his podcast with the UCLA's head coach, you know, discussing Rock, before I saw, you know, listen to that, my only question is, what's the character like? You know, if this guy is going to be a long-term player that you're hoping to be maybe the first $100 million player in this franchise history, is he going to be worth giving that money to and him producing at that level beyond? And then I listened to that podcast. You can say whatever you want about a coach talking about his player, but one thing stuck out to me most in that discussion was he said that in the past three seasons, Rock could have left for NIL money to any organization, SEC, anywhere in the country. And he didn't even flinch at staying here and being with his boys to compete for winning baseball at UCLA. To me, that's a culture guy. And like, when I heard that, I'm like, that's awesome. Cause that's probably absolutely true, right? A player that magnitude can absolutely leave at a flinch for money. And knowing that, once I heard that, I'm like, you know what? That's it. That's all I need to hear. I'm sold on the character. But again, like Eric said, if injury happens, sure, I'm looking at the board again.
Even with injury, you take the best. None of these college players are going to impact a franchise in the next 2 years. Like, that's such a hit or miss. If he's the guy, he's the guy. Gonzo, he could have stayed in UCLA because his girlfriend told him not to go anywhere else. You know.
That's true.
Yeah, there's worse campuses to be all year long than in California, for sure.
Yeah, but again, I think that, you know, I don't think that – I can't say he's the next Frank Thomas because that's a Hall of Fame guy, but that's the type of draft. I don't think when the White Sox drafted Frank Thomas, they thought he was going to be what he became. But it's a first-rounder that they cannot miss on. And if you go and look at the first rounders that the White Sox have picked, I'm not going to say names because then I'll get message people crying, but there's a lot of misses, okay? So they're looking for a guy that can play Major League Baseball for, you know, 8-10 years as a starter. That's what a first rounder is.
Well, when Ray and I talked about – I like what you said there, and to piggyback on that a little bit. What Ray and I talked about on our show last week was, like, if you look at the Central, everybody's kind of had that guy that Gonzo was just referring to, right? The Twins got Buxton. the Royals got Witt. You know, Cleveland's got Jose. They tagged one guy on to pay him to, like, be the face of the franchise. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to be those types of players, but he could mean that to the White Sox. He could be the guy that they extend for 10 years. He could be the guy they sign early, the guy that's going to be there, be that type of guy that ends up being the face of the deal. And it's going to be pretty tough to pass on that.
Yeah, and I just want to piggyback off that. Like, the concept of missing on a player, to Ozzie's point, to Eric's point, if he's the impact player that the scouts are saying that they have not seen this type of caliber player in the last decade, right? People are saying that he is a mix of Tatis and Bobby Witt. You know, like, these are the names, I swear I would bring it up and show you, but this is what people are saying.
Somebody right? needs to see some of that.
This is what people are saying. Like, I will, like, share it out or whatever, but this is what scouts are saying. This is like, he is can't miss. He is, you have to bring him in. And to my other point, the White Sox are not going to compete this year. I'm sorry to tell White Sox fans, you're going to see a competent baseball team because of the manager, right? The manager and the people they brought in are really good baseball guys at the things that they do well. At the end of the day, we're not going to win a whole bunch of games. We're going to hope that we don't lose another.
So we're not winning 95 this year?
No, we're not.
No, but Ray's right, though, but it's extremely important. So I was talking about this offseason, I became – Ray, finish your point. Sorry.
It's fine. I just want to say, like, we're temper expectations. Expect to lose 100. If we don't, great. But the competition was all – I mean, the White Sox being competitive was always going to be 2027. Been saying that for the last 3 years.
Number one priority by Getz entering the offseason was continuing development.
Yes. And so, but then
leave it at that.
But we all know that with the prospects we have, right, mm-hmm. we are going to see a change of guard on the South side as far as some of these guys that we've been waiting on. Hagen Smith, Noah Schultz, Sam Antanasi, Caleb, well, maybe not Caleb, but. Braden Montgomery. And then you bring in a college guy that can slide right in that slot next year, right? Yeah. You bring that college guy in where he could come in possibly and make a debut next year. That's just how I see it. That's the layering. That college guy comes in and he fits right in that contention window. But go ahead, Ozzie.
No, you have to look at White Sox history, and the White Sox are in the same situation that they were in 1986, 1987, okay, where you had Carlton Fisk, veteran player, Ozzie Guillen. You had just two or three guys. They lose 100 games, but they had a couple players, and then they started drafting guys like Frank Thomas, Alex Fernandez, Robin Ventura, Scott Radinsky, Jack McDowell, Ray Durham eventually, and that's what built the 90s. You know, 90 away. But Ozzie, I asked Ozzie Senior, you know, when did you guys start changing that mentality? And he said, we were trying to do that since 1986, 87. You know, once Jeff Torber went for Gosi left, when Jeff Torber got there and those young players started getting there, we started setting the culture, you know, from that start of we need to be good. You know, we don't want to lose 100 games. So those players, the key part of for Will, and for those guys is you got to start building that so that they can play for the next 6, 7, 8 years together from the start. So having young players is important, but having that culture around them and the way of playing baseball the right way is key, because this is what they're looking at. They're building at right now, but you know, they're building internally. They're not going to go sign a $400 million.
Okay. So what I'm getting, because when I look at the box score on Justin LeBron, I see a 600 slug. I see almost 20 stolen bases and 230 plate attempts. Like, you're seeing both sides of the ball. Obviously, he can catch the ball. But when Gonzo says Rock stayed back to be with his boys, this is the perfect opportunity to put him in a situation to where you're going from the beginning, like the infancy of your career, into when you're putting pen to paper on a serious level. If you could bring a competitive team and be at the core of that, imagine how much conviction he'll have working for your W's, making sure that the Chicago White Sox are competitive. Like, if that's what I'm dealing with, then I agree with you, OJ, even through injury, because you don't really need him tomorrow. You need him 2.5 years from now. So as long as he gets that ironed out and he's invested in your product, invested in what you're doing, I'm trying to figure out what Getz is going to do to put him around. Because, I mean, obviously everybody needs help in baseball, but what is Chris Getz going to do when it's time to put W's on the calendar?
Well, he's gonna try to put the right team together to put W. So we transition to the next topic. I hope it's not the same scouts that saw Pantera.
Oh boy.
They said that he was the next Roberto Clemente, that he was a cross between, you know, Jesse Barfield and Dave Parker and, you know, Mickey Mantle, the Cuban version of him. So I've seen scouts. I've done that as well. You know, I said Jorge Soler would be a Hall of Famer. That didn't pan out very well. So you're going to miss. And here's the thing. Everybody thinks that all these prospects are going to hit. There's probably going to be only 5 or 6 guys that are going to hit. They don't know who they're going to be, but you take your chances on having the best talent and see who hits. Because I know that they didn't think Colson was going to hit the way that he hit last year. I think they brought him up to say sink or swim, kid.
I agree. We all agree with that one.
Yeah, I agree with that. But again, look, he showed up. Showed face, did his job, and now they have a guy that, you know, could be here for the next couple of years. So here's the part where I love, though. I hope that Rock is amazing and that he is the guy that they need, because then they don't have to go sign a guy that's worth $500 million. And they'll make the people wait. And Jerry doesn't have to spend the money because he'll be cheap for 5-6 years. Look at Gonzo's face. Yep. Don't sign it, Jerry. Don't spend $100 million on a guy yet. Hold off.
Well, that's not Jerry's money.
Way to go, Ishbia. White Sox Twitter, Ozzy.
At this point, I'm enjoying the fact that they haven't spent $100 million on a player.
And Chris Getz helped out by doing a salary dump this past week and pulled off one hell of a little deal before Sox Fest, at least. Luis Robert Jr. was traded to the New York Mets. In exchange, we get Senior's boy out of the Venezuelan Winter League, Luis Angel Acuna, infielder. Wow, and a right.
Luis Angel Acuna.
There you go. That's not it, because it was also the right-hander from Harvard.
Truman Paulet.
Where did he go to school? Harvard?
Harvard, yeah.
He can at least help in the analytical department if he can't make it. You can, like, move him over.
We're putting him in there.
I would love to be a conversation between him and Lisandro, the guy from Harvard and Lisandro.
Listen, Ryan Fitzpatrick, NFL quarterback, he was from Harvard. He did all right.
Yeah, we'll get to Paulie in a little bit, but go ahead, Ozzy. I want you to take over because there was a phone call between Chris Getz and your father, and I'll let you take
over. They always talk. They've been looking at him forever, for a long, long time. You know, I brought it up a long time ago that he'd be a good fit just because I didn't see a place for him on the Mets, and he has a lot of tools that are really hard to find, which means that he can play both the outfield and the infield. And could probably be just as good in, you know, wherever they decide to play him. I think his best stat is that he's a half brother of Ronald Acuna and Micah Garcia. That's the best. So that's right. One of his best. But I think it was a smart move because I think Pantera was making a lot of money and he wasn't going to be here for what they're trying to build. So it was really pointless having him. You can get something in return in a player that you hope could become a guy that plays every day in the major league level, either in the infield at second base or wherever they decide to put him, or be a center fielder, you know, left fielder. And he's explosive. The closest thing, I think, for someone that's ever worn a White Sox uniform, I think he could be a Ray Durham. I don't think he's going to be a 6-point war player where everyone's thinking that he is. I think if he brings a 2 war every single year consistently, they've got a big problem solved. But he plays with a lot of passion and he cares about playing. I don't think that they're going to have the same problem that they did with guys like Moncada, where they thought that he wasn't trying because this kid plays with pride. And I think that the Sox fans are going to, you know, appreciate that. He loves playing baseball and he loves being good. So I think that he's going to try to be as great as he can be.
So I just want to say, like, on the shock value of the trade, like, obviously I was indifferent about Luis Robert getting traded. Obviously they've been talking about it for a long time. It's like ripping a Band-Aid off. But when I first seen the name Luis Angel Acuña, I was thinking, oh my God, the White Sox are trying to fill that Otto Lopez type of role. Now, I don't think I would play Otto Lopez in the outfield if I'm a manager, but from what your dad was saying earlier, where he's a very headsy baseball, like he's fundamentally sound and he's savvy. Like the first thing that popped in my mind, and then shout out to Nat Gaetti this morning, is it was Tuesday. People don't remember a player called Nefi Perez.
I do.
Bro, when I realized, like, that's a niche baseball player that, you know, Chris Getz obviously he wanted, I was like, okay, now we're back to building a roster. So I'm glad that they are figuring out and isolating different positions and different roles for players. And even if they got to go outside the organization, obviously, I mean, they're not they got the Mets to spend, what, the $10 million on Luis Robert, the $20 million, whatever the ticket was. So, I mean, you got that off the books on top of getting a valuable baseball player. So, I mean, you probably thought that you was going to get a little bit more value for Luis Robert, but you got a cost-effective niche baseball player. I don't know, understand what else you were looking for. And it looked like we made it out with the trade pretty good.
And we'll see. And we'll see. And I think that another reason is because the tools that Luis Angel brings are very hard to find in the draft in the United States, because all those guys are playing basketball or playing football in the United States. It's really, really hard to find tools like that in the draft, meaning a guy that has baseball skills and can be very explosive and can play baseball, meaning his speed, the power that he has for a smaller guy. You know, I think that that's what they were looking for, is the tool set. And again, it's a huge salary dump. I think they got two players. I don't know why everybody thought that they were going to get a 10-player return.
I thought we were getting David Wright. I'm not going to lie, bro.
But I'm just saying, like, people overvalue. Again, Pantera was big and exciting here in Chicago. Like, the people here thought that he was a big deal. Everybody else is, like, looking at the stat sheet and the value and the amount of injuries. And the Mets are banking. They got to win right now. So they're trying to get a 5.3 WAR season from him. You know, yeah, that
they're trying to get lightning in the bottle.
Yeah,
lightning in the bottle right now.
You're not going to give him. You didn't sign him for a long-term deal. You're going a different route. You know, I think that it was great that he got to play under Will for a couple years, for, you know, so that maybe Will could see if, you know, can I fix this guy? Can I get the most out of him? And he couldn't. You know, meaning, like, let's move on and try something different. So that's where I think that they're really making a move to try a different plan. Because when I think Luis Robert Pantera, he was the last piece of the last rebuild. He was supposed to be the guy that, you know, took him over the hump. He was the big superstar that was going to carry them over. The reason that they didn't sign Bryce Harper, the reason that they didn't sign, you know, Manny Machado, you know, Pantera was Harper. Eloy was Harper. Moncada was supposed to be Manny Machado. And, you know, they bet wrong.
So he was close in 2019. He was close.
So I think that and I think that also they're banking in a younger guy that is not going to be injury prone. And I love it. The main reason that I love it is that he is going to create competition amongst a couple positions.
Absolutely.
I love the fact that the Venable and the front office is very open to having people compete in positions, even when there is somebody that is a high draft pick or someone that is playing well. The mistake in the last rebuild was they just gave positions away to people just because. You're the second baseman, no one's going to move you. You're the first baseman, no one's going to move you. And that was an issue because they kept failing and failing and failing. So Luis Angel has nothing, you know, guaranteed for him. He's got to go to spring training and show that he can play. If he doesn't play well, start him in AAA. You know, that's what he's coming here to compete. He's coming here to compete for a job. Both guys are. And I think that that's the exciting part. And for him, he gets a chance to play every day and be a part of something great eventually. So it's up to him to play great. He got a big opportunity, and Pantera now, he went to a huge market. Good luck hiding when he's every day on the Mets front of the newspaper.
That's it.
SNY's network is crazy.
That's
before
it.
Before we kick it to the money side of this, I want to add about the competition side, because there should be nowhere on that diamond should anyone feel comfortable right now. Like, give Mydrith competition in spring training at second base, because guess what? Later in the season, you'll probably get Antonacci there as well, competing at second base before anyone gets kicked out of the infield to the outfield, et cetera, et cetera. At, you know, whether they break camp in the opening day throughout the season, what opening day that roster looks like to begin the year is going to look totally different by the end of the year. And I'm going to add this comment as we get to the money side of this so Eric can jump in. But what I got to say here about all the people on Twitter saying they got to spend 10 more million on this and that to make that 20 million at the end of the day. Yes, it was a salary dump, but guess what? Whatever value that they picked up with Dominguez at 10 million a year, these are assets that they're trying to trade at the deadline to keep on structuring this system as they're continuing to build what they're building right now, the core going forward. Because like was said prior, not all these prospects are going to hit. They're in a really strong, promising direction of guys coming up in the system to develop not only the minors, but at the major league level. But this is going to be, you know, at some point when they bring this core up, that doesn't mean the rebuild's over and they begin retooling, et cetera, because they're going to be structuring time in and time out. And when I bring up not being comfortable with kind of like what Ben Johnson said of the Bears, because guess what? Some of these guys, they're going to be trading later on, and guys that you might fall in love with just because they're going to keep on structuring their system and building sustainable success. And guess what? There's organizations that are already doing it, like the Brewers, except Dodgers, et cetera. Go ahead, Eric. Take it away, because I know you want to dive more into that than I will.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I just want to piggyback on something that, you know, Ozzy said. They should have traded Robert the day that boxing video came out with him in the driveway. The second he was hitting those fucking gloves, they should have fucking just traded him, because there is no alpha male beast leading shoulders hitting those fucking gloves. It should have just kicked him out the day after those gloves were hit. Like, that should have been day one. That dude is not a leader of my squad. Oh, you my can't God. Even, like, box around the fucking deal. Like, he was slapping those things, like, open. It was bad. It was bad. But, like, you know, how did we get Acuna? Why did we get Acuna? A couple things are important to understand. One, yes, salary dump to the deal. But Acuna's also out of options. So, like, he can't go to AAA and start. He can't move now. But I want you to think about that. You're talking about a 23-year-old that is out of options. That means a promise for this kid, an ability here, when he started seeing major league time, and he saw it at a very, very young age. So, like, the fact that he was out of options, you know, Ozzy brought it up. No, he didn't fit on the Mets because he was going to have to stay on the roster the whole entire year. They can't send him back up and back down or whatever. That's the reason the Sox ended up for it. As far as the competition standpoint, you know, I appreciate it, and I agree. I think they should do it, but to everybody's point, you have to understand the key about this is development. And the only way for development to see what we got is if everybody gets at bats. So, like, Acuna moving into center field just makes 100% for that deal to get everybody the bats, see what we got, see what's going on as far as that side goes. But, like, he's got a lot of things to work on. But what's interesting, you know, Ray and I have talked about this. Like, there's been some typical players that you've seen Getz go get. And Ray, well, I already know what I'm going to say. They don't whiff and they don't K. Acuna's ahead of the curve in those already. He definitely has to work on the pull and on the fly ball thing. But I saw him hit four home runs in a winter league game, you know, the other day. Like, you can see some of that stuff coming. I mean, you're talking, again, he's 23. He's what some of these college seniors are going to be when they're just getting drafted. And he's already out of options. So, like, I think some time with him and getting on a deal. But the White Sox had some success last year. Call it Ryan Fuller, call it development, which is great to see. But I think it was, off the top of my head, Benintendi, Brooks Baldwin, Tochman, Vargas, and Lenny Soso all had career highs in pull fly ball percentages that they've never had in their career. And that raw power that, you know, Ozzy got to, you start pulling the ball and start putting it in the air, you'll see a little bit higher numbers on some of those home run deals on that snip. You know, right now he's got a very high ground ball rate, very high opposite field rate.
Yeah, but it's like 39%.
Yeah, the White Sox had a chance. They developed some of that last year and took that out of some of the guys. So is that there? Is Fuller going to be able to do that? Because if it is, this kid could steal 70 bases. I mean, like, he's as fast as they come. He could be a flat game changer. He could be a cool center fielder.
Imagine Jose Caballero that doesn't strike out. That's right. What we're potentially looking at right now. This is better than Esteury Ruiz for that niche type of player. We're talking about potentially a poor man's Xavier Edwards.
If he can hit 250, you know, and hit 10 or 15 home runs, he can steal 60 bags. If we're going to walk him too, he could be looking at a 350 OBP. Like, that would be ideal. He'd be that three WAR player that you're looking for if you put up those kind of stats. And also too, to everybody's point, besides the boxing deal, like, Robert was gone in 2 years. We got Acuna to 2030. He's not a free agent to 2031. So, I mean, that gives him time. The one thing the White Sox have on their side right now is there's no rush to win right now, this day, this thing. These kids can play. They can learn at this level. They can develop at this level. They can develop together, as Ozzie said. So it's an interesting move that they got for him. They held stubborn on it, and it worked. I think they ended up getting a pretty good deal here.
And I just want to just kind of, like, finish it off and put a little cherry on top. I need White Sox fans to understand, like, the era of letting players lose value, I think that's gone. I think that when players are producing, they're going to be rewarded with contracts. If we have players that are not producing and they're consistently losing value under contract, I don't think Getz is the type of GM that's going to allow them to just completely lose value or let somebody with value just walk. You're going to see a lot more trades with Chris Getz as your GM that are going to continue to replenish. You're not going to have a skeleton farm underneath Chris Getz. I don't think that's ever going to be the thing again. The blueprint is out there. If you guys will follow the organizations that never hit the rut that we did, then you can understand what the blueprint is on how to keep the farm and that machine rolling, okay? You got the continuously – Eric says this all the time. It's not about the jersey number in the front and the name on the back. It's about the organization as a whole consistently looking at players as assets. And I know it sounds bad, but once you lose value, the team starts to be able to lose value, if that makes sense. So, like, you have to look at it that way. And I don't think Chris Getz is the type of GM.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at what the situation they got on the north side. Everybody was up in arms because Nico Horner wasn't a top 100 player, but he was a top three second baseman for some reason. The Cubs deteriorated his value because now you're in a position to where to get the return on your investment, you're going to have to re-sign him because you're not going to get the crop that you could have commanded a year and a half ago. It's the same thing with the White Sox. They just got creative and got a player of value. Not saying that the Cubs won't get a player anything of value for Nico, but that value drastically deteriorated, like Ray said, when you wait and sit and let the investment just evaporate. Because that's what it does, is it evaporates, and now you're trying to work your way back into thinking you're getting some of value for something that you wasted in the first place.
I mean, you could just name the players in the last from the last one that we thought we was going to make a move, make some noise in the league. Just name the players and then see what the return were for them. It's out there. Like, I'm not going to go through it. I'm not going to name names, but there are players where their value just diminished and we literally got nothing back for
them. I will say, when Ray says the blueprint is out there, Milwaukee Brewers traded Corbin Burns in his last year of his contract to Baltimore and won the division. They turned around and traded Devin Williams the year after that and won their division. They turned around, they traded Freddy Peralta this year. They're going to be one of the favorites to win the division again. You saw the Houston Astros last year trade Kyle Tucker in the last year of their contract to get that haul from the Cubs before it went all the way to zero. And they were still, you know, super competitive ball club. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to see that blueprint is out there. Like, it needs to be followed.
So what I like is the Eric, great point on the age. So we always laugh at that when they're like, oh, this kid's a prospect, this college guy. And he's like 24, 25 with COVID. With Rock, what I would do if I was Chris Getz, I send him to winter ball right away to go play with men. And that's my worry. Can he adapt to playing with men? you know, because he's not in college anymore. College is a kid's game. You know, that's my opinion. Lee Sanley has been playing with grown dudes for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And he's very mature. He did – there was something that he did that was very interesting, which his brother would have never done. He hit a ball in Venezuela, and he didn't run it out. And the next day they interviewed him, and he said, before I start talking, I want to apologize to all the fans and all the kids, because if you're a kid and you want to, you know, walk to the bases, hit a home run because I disrespected the game. Okay, now interview me. So that's who he is. He's very different.
I like it.
In that aspect where he does things like that. But I want to touch a point before we ended this. I just saw a couple people talk about the $10 million that they're saving. They're saving that money for people when they have to sign Rock and all those people. Why go waste $10 million just to bring a body? I don't understand this. Like, if money gets taken off the book just to add it. That's how you add a player that's an older player that's bad for the culture, that starts being toxic because he doesn't agree with Will or what Will wants to do. Like, veteran players are great when they work out. When they don't, it's really bad. It's toxic. It's so you have to find the right guy. So why go just go spend money just to go spend money and take at-bats from a younger player, take innings from a younger pitcher, and just spend money to spend money?
Yeah, like, no. I don't get that. Ozzie, I think that's a brilliant point. And the thing is, you got to find the guy. I think Dominguez is perfect in this role. You got a guy that improved towards the end of last year. You're going to give him a shot to close. He's got something to prove. He's not entitled. He immediately comes with the trade value that Gonzo mentioned. You give him the two-year deal, which we trade him at a deadline. You get a year and a half of him, which really increases his value. Same with this guy they signed from Japan or Korea baseball. They brought over for the 2 years. Yeah, Cave for the 2 years. Very similar to what they did with Eric Fetty. Like, that's a guy that's got something to prove. Prove that he can still be here. They're still in the fight. Dominguez wants to be a closer. Like, it's got to be the right fit, not only money and trade-wise, but it's got to fit the dynamic that they're still here to prove themselves. They're a major leaguer. They want more, those type things.
And we've done the old player thing for so long, even during Ozzie's era.
The whole Band-Aid thing. Like,
Andrew Jones just got put into the Hall of Fame, and my dad's like, I'm the only manager that has, like, I manage, like, six Hall of Famers, and the only reason is because everyone came to end their careers with me.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's saying, Ozzie got committed 8-9 Hall of Famers. He's like, yeah, when they were 50.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know,
the end of their career. So it's like, they had that theory, and it doesn't mean that it was a bad one, but you wanted something different. And this is different. And now people are freaking out about different. Because before Ozzie got here, they used to patch it up. When Ozzie got here, it used to get patched up. When Ozzie left, they patched it up. So, you know, why not try something different? And the only advice I ever gave Chris Getz when he got the job, I said, Chris, just don't use the stupid word window. Don't talk about a window. Don't give it a time frame. Don't say anything about your plan and put it there. Because the biggest mistake the last group did was talk about a window and give it a time frame. Oh, we're going to win in 2028. We're going to win in 2029. You can't do that. Just say, hey, we're building slowly. And again, you want to build consistency. Because in today's game of baseball, it's really hard to see a champion in a team compete who's a Cinderella. Those days are long gone. It's very hard to see a team just come out of the blue and go to the playoffs that hasn't been consistent for a couple years. Or a team win the World Series that just surprised everybody. Everyone that's good has been good for a couple years and have great systems. So I think the game is changing in that aspect. And the White Sox are getting with the times of, hey, we got to build, you know, we got to build consistent teams if we want to compete more than one season.
That's exactly my point. That's why I think Chris Getz and the moves he makes, he's giving you a he's letting you peek behind the curtain a little bit.
The Bears ain't gonna happen. The Bears ain't gonna happen. The Cinderella year the Bears had ain't gonna happen.
But it ain't the NFL. NFL, everybody goes from last to first.
Right. NFL, you get a guy, you get a draft. And again, that's with the Rocket thing, you know, and they talked about Noah, and then they talked, you have the time to take your time to develop these players.
Yeah,
if somebody doesn't do well, you can send them back down. I think they're in the right position. And again, what's the point? You know, we got the potential strike coming along the way. I love the fact that Will is everyone's confident in him. He got to bring his own staff, okay, because he had inherited everybody. So it's new blood. So it's the steps that they're taking, you know, are interesting one. And you know, they're winning on every side of the operations. They're winning in the draft. They've looked great They're winning in the trades. They've looked strong. There's free agent signings, you know, not only in the U.S. market, but we're getting people from Japan now.
Really?
And since OJ said that, we haven't – our last podcast, we talked about what, you know, the top – I think top five we did for the upcoming draft order would be. And we didn't even get a chance to talk about Mooney. So once we ended that podcast, the White Sox a week later signed our boy Murakami. And I'm going to let you guys react to it, at least OJ and Jay, because I know Ray and Eric have already had their conversation on their show, but they can join us as well. But we signed him to a $34 million two-year deal, which I know the potential strike can impact that. I would be really interested after 1 year if maybe they do trade him away and get value for him. But before we even get to that point, I'm really interested because it's a very great short-term move because they really didn't have anybody truly to fill in first base in the short term until some of those prospects come up that could take that position. So I'm interested in the short term what Mooney does there, even if he can fill that position defensively, let alone what the bat actually does with that profile. Jay, take it away, because I know you got those season tickets to see those opposite field home runs. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to lie, Gonzo. Once I got that notification and I was on the phone with the ticket rep, like, hey, what can you give me? I need a 13 and 15 game package. But the DNA that he has, like, all I've seen was just videos of him blasting balls all over these Tokyo domes. And I'm thinking, like, is this a superhero? Like, are the White Sox literally in the running for a superhero? Now, mind you, the game is a little bit different over there. Obviously, he's going to have to adjust to a little bit of velocity, maybe different arm slots. But at the end of the day, I'm excited because you plug left-handed OPS into a White Sox lineup. I don't know how many times we could actually say that. The last time we made a move like that was Adam Dunn, to be honest with you. So hope I understand that he has a little bit of swing and miss, but he's probably going to have an 800 OPS. I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but he has a clause in his contract to where you can't send him down unless he's comfortable with it or something like that. But I'm excited, Gonzo. When I don't know what else to say besides sit back, relax, and strap it down. Murakami is coming to a TV near you.
I haven't bought a jersey in a while. Obviously, Luis Angel is interesting, but I was excited about this signing even before the Luis Angel one, the trade, because I love Japanese players, number one, because they're just so different, but I love how disciplined they are. Won't be a problem in the clubhouse. He's going to go do his job. And when Japanese players tend to come to the United States, they want to prove that they can play at this level. Good. So there is a commitment from them culture-wise. And he's got a great team around him. I know his translator, and he's excited to be a White Sox player. I think that the Sox have had success with Japanese players in the past. I also think, again, I don't know if this was part of the strategy, there was no one in the market with the skill sets that he has. So if they were looking specifically for the left-handed bat, somebody that can play first base, someone that can hit home runs, there wasn't really anybody out there for that price that fit those tools. You got better probably defensively. Now you have the left-handed power. And yeah, everyone's talking about the strikeouts. Everybody strikes out, you know, but the difference is this guy might hit 25 when he's striking out. And that's what I find exciting, that he's the power guy. So I think, and again, you're doing it in a season. Okay. You're not locked in into a 9-year contract. Okay. Which it's scary because then you have those contracts and you go, oh boy, now we're stuck with this guy here for a long, long time. If he works out, he works out. If not, trust me, if you put him in the market, somebody will take him. So not a very, very high reward, very, very low risk when it comes to that, just because of where the team is at right now. And if he does do good and the team's transitioning to that competition level, you got a solid player, you know, that's already been in Chicago, that's comfortable. And I think that when you have the Japanese connection, you have to keep doing it. We're seeing it with Ohtani in the Dodgers. There's a lot of great players there. We're going to see in the WBC. I think that the White Sox woke up. We saw Tanahiro Higuchi this summer. And that was something that he had brought up, like, you know, use me, you know, I'm out there. You know, imagine if the White Sox could have landed Ohtani. You know, but I'm saying that's marketing.
Absolutely.
If you know somebody, you're going to tell them. It's like when you go to a job. Oh, don't go to that place. That place sucks. You know, they work you too much. But so I think that the Sox have had really high success with Japanese players. Not only the team, they like the city, culture-wise, it's been a good fit. So other than the East Coast or West Coast teams, I feel like Chicago's the only place that they go other than, like, you know, the big Asian marketplaces is Chicago. So I'm excited for him to just do his thing. And again, you fill a hole that but actually has been an issue for a very long time. I didn't want to see Lenin Sosa play first. And that's my boy. I saw him in Venezuela. I was laughing at him the whole time. I was filming him and said, oh, what a disaster. I was like, you won't be. I said,
what a disaster.
This can't play first base. Looks uncomfortable. You know, he got a little bit bigger because of the power thing. He just looked horrible. And I was like, oh, God. You know, you're a bad
team. Where does he play now? Where does he play now, Ozzy? Where does he play now?
Well, he was playing second base. That was a.
No, I'm saying for the White Sox. For the White Sox.
He's got to be a DH.
DH,
he's in a platoon DH. Platoon DH and just face one arm slot at this point or move him.
Hey, I just want to ask y'all. I just want to hold on, Gonzo, because I want to ask Eric right now. I got the 10th overall pick in the first year players draft. Murakami's on the board. Do I have to pull the trigger, or can I bypass him and survive?
I mean, if you're going to stay true to yourself, which is to you is more important than sometimes of value, you have to take it. If you let him go by, like, you can't be buying a jersey and sitting in right field if you let him go by on the 10th pick. Like, you got to stay true to yourself and you got to take him. You got to take him. I'll just say, like, Ozzy made a good point. New ownership coming, new ball stadium coming. All ballparks you will see going forward are going to be smaller, selling more suite-type deals. Nothing better than to get in the Japan market. This breaks the ice for that. They should continue to do that. The other point I will make, and I don't think you're going to hear anybody else talk about this, Ray, we're going to talk about it, but I'm going to do it here, is one of the best traits he brings is he brings the spotlight with him. And he takes it off of everybody else that is young, trying to develop. All of a sudden, people aren't staring at T. They're not Teal. They're not staring at some of the young guys. They're not staring at Vargas, who's going to produce, who's going to deal, because all the spotlight, all the media, all the attention goes right to him. It's going to make the young guys a little more comfortable. They don't have to be in front of the mic as much. They don't have to be in the spotlight as much. They just get a chance to play ball. I think that's a very valuable point here that he brings with him that I don't think you hear a lot of people talk about.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And it also brings a lot of media, and players get to feel what it's like, but it's not about them. I don't think people realize how big a Japanese player. I don't think fans
realize
what a Japanese player does to an organization from an exposure standpoint. Like Tadahito Yuchi had like 35 media members covering him. That's before the World Series. So I can only imagine Ohtani. They follow their game, and I think it's exciting. I think it's just really, really cool that you get to have a guy like that from a fan base perspective point. You get to watch a guy that could become, you know, an Ohtani. He's the best player in baseball. What happens if this guy becomes half of Ohtani? The Sox are in very good shape.
But we got about 10 minutes left on the show. And before Eric and Ray jump off, I got one last topic and question I'm going to pose to them. And they're going to answer first before our crew gets to it. And that question is, what is one expectation that you have going into spring training that you want to see by the time that camp breaks? Ray, I'll give it to you first.
One expectation that I have for what now? One more time for me.
One expectation that you have for spring training by the time that camp breaks, what do you want to see happen?
That's a damn good question. I wish I'd have. Okay. I think the expectation. That's a really good question, guys. So shout out to you for that.
You want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Eric, because I really want to think about that, because that's an important question, because my mind is only on Brady Montgomery. Sorry. That's just all I'm thinking about.
First of all, I think people misread spring training. We get to see a few games here and there, and I think it's some kind of competition. Like, people were like, Mastrini needs to make the opening day roster, and like Jordan Leisure is our closer. Well, look where that shit ended up now. Like, spring training is just a game. We only get to see a little part of it. What goes on behind the scenes is way more vibrant than any of us will ever know, and we don't get to see it. We're not privy to a lot of that information. But the one thing I'll be interested in is something's got to break in the middle infield and some of the stuff. So where does it go? Like, I think maybe Sam moves to left or tries some time in the outfield. You know, what do they do with Acuna? Where do some of these multi-position players have? What are they going to do? What happens to Curtis Mead and all this? Like, you know, he was a spring train darling last year. The people, including my partner, were running around picking up on their fantasy team because he had a good spring training and going nuts. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so where does he end up? Can they find a spot for him? Where do some of the positions play out? That's where I'm going to be most curious is on the defensive side, what are they going to try with some of the guys? And where they
I got mine now. Mine is just what happened when they sent Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz and the pitchers off last year. Did they find the pitchers and the command for the pitchers that they had? And my expectation is to kind of understand like how the White Sox view them, where they're going to slot them. And if they have that command, then we could kind of like make a guesstimation on when we will see Schultz, Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz and, you know, Tanner McDougal. So make sure you guys follow Tanner McDougal. That is the one that you really want to follow. Oh, last one. Grant Taylor. Is Grant Taylor going to be starting his spring training? That's the only question I have. If he starts his spring training, then I know where we're going with him. I expect him to be a starter. I said it 3 years ago. He's the ace of this fucking team. He's the fucking ace. And if he starts, then welcome to I ain't gonna say it, Jake, but you know who I think he is.
I'm not saying anything either. That's none of my business. I'm gonna let you die on that hill. Me personally, Eric touched on it a little bit about multi-positional players. What does Will Venable do with Brooks Baldwin? Like, you got a guy that could play the infield and the outfield. So can you imagine the competition that him and Luis Angel could have in center field? And then they could reciprocate that level of competitiveness at second base or shortstop or wherever Will wants to put him. And then, I need some George Wolkow highlights in spring training. I think it's time to start showcasing him, giving his cup of coffee early. He's a super athlete now. You worry about the swing and miss. I don't care. I don't know if you guys seen that Carter Jensen home run that he hit in
5:15
Sacramento. No, it was like 485.
I'm talking about your boy George Wolkow hit one last year 5:15.
Yeah, like, and I want to see if he can put that on display. So I mean, the competition sure. It's going to be watered down. Everybody's just trying to get their feet wet with playing the game of baseball on a competitive level. But I want to see the White Sox showcase these guys that all these bloggers been tweeting about. I need to see it in the flesh.
Yeah. And I, like he said, the guest said he's going to be in the bullpen. Okay. But in what role, right?
Vantrack got him projected at over 10 quality starts.
But still, there is a process of getting stretched out from the bullpen. We saw it with Chris Sale.
Yeah, for sure.
We saw it with fucking Justice Boyd that is now in Boston, Gary Crochet. So that's the thing. Like, that's what I mean by that, right?
Whatever you read or see on social media, that's one thing versus what's actually done on the diamond, what the front office actually does.
Well, I think that when you're looking at a spring training, you know, this team is a little bit different because when you go in with a competitive season, you're really looking at maybe adding one or two guys or that's your one or two spots are going to be what you're deciding on. Those were like Ozzie's years as managing. People think like, oh, this guy's going to make the teams. Like, nah, there's like one or two spots. Like the team's already made. And then we're just looking at development. But with White Sox, the spring training is very important for two reasons. I'm not talking about the games. I'm talking about it's the only time where you have all of your organization in one place and you get to see the guys match up against big league guys and have them side by side and comparing them and saying, oh, this guy, you know, Wolko, the big guy, the big kid. I hope that he's a real deal because I hope that he didn't sell me like Joe Borchardt did. I thought Joe Borchardt was going to be the White Sox future right fielder for the next 10 years. And Ozzie Senior kept telling me, take it easy, take it easy. It's just batting practice. Take it easy. You know, we know what we got here. And I'm like, Joe Borchardt needs to be the right fielder. You know, Matt Gill's gone. You know, so that happened. Again, I was a lot younger, but that's where you have to do those evaluations of really see what you have and when you're really planning out. And then seeing what you have in the minor leagues where potentially you're not going to use those guys in the future, but who are going to be those fill-in guys that are going to come up in the middle of the year. See, one of the reasons that teams struggle is because there's such a deficit of players at the AAA level that when they bring them up to the big leagues, it's like they could have brought you or me up there. It's like this guy's he's not even competing. So in spring training, you can find those guys and say, okay, if somebody gets hurt, this is a guy that's going to come up and fill that spot for us where it's not going to cost us games, okay? And then the guys from the future, where are you thinking of putting them? You know, is this guy going to AA? Is this guy going to AAA? You know, where do I want to put Noah? You know, do I want to keep Noah pitching against little kids so he can keep looking like a video game, or do I want to take him up? That's what spring training is so important, and especially going into the draft class, because the draft class is not just one round. Everyone's worried about the first round. I'll give you this much. I'll fail on the first rounder if the next 10 rounds hit. I hope that kid busted. But if the next 10 rounds hit, like, people don't realize that Ray Durham got picked up in that, like, night, the same draft. I think it was, like, Frank or somebody got picked. Ray Durham was picked in, a same draft class with, like, a guy that was, like, in college and did really well. And Ray Durham came up, like, 8 years later. But that's a success. So when you're drafting, you got to see guys that are on your current team and have that mindset and say, okay, this is what we currently have. What do we need? And that's what you go and try to fill in those later rounds. So I think it's extremely important. My expectation is that, you know, Will, and I think that's already there, you're not necessarily breaking camp and saying we're going to win the division, but you're breaking camp and saying I'm building culture in a way of playing baseball. Because one thing that was made that has been a mistake before is when you see guys that are superstars and are just super talented, and you think just because they're just really good that you don't have to coach them, that you don't have to teach them. And that was a mistake last time, because in the last time they were building guys, they just let them run free. Oh, no, let them be. They're superstars. And then when the game got hard, they couldn't tell those guys what to do. They couldn't coach them. This is when you start coaching those guys. Yeah. That's what's important of building that culture. And again, trade. You know, you evaluate your guys. That's a huge part of it because other teams are scouting it. But spring training is a big deal. When you're looking at arms, guys get in the mix of competition. It's really important. And when you're there, you're not looking at just top names that people know. You're looking at other positions that you got to fill. So my expectation is that they break camp with a plan of not only building competition, but then those guys like Luis Angel Acuña, for example, is he going to be at center field or is he going to be at second base? And if it's going to be both, what does it look like? Is Lenin Sosa only going to face righties and somebody else is going to face the lefties? Like, you got to break camp and let guys know what their role is going to be. Hey, I think that I want you to play. I wonder how many teams do this. Ozzie used to go on spring training and say, hey, I think that I need you this year for 150 games. Guys would be like, what? Yeah, I need you for 150 games. Mentally, you think you can play every game, but you're not. And you think right now you're getting yourself ready for 130. You got to pace yourself. So having enough pitching to cover your year, letting guys know what their role is, and that so that you don't see a guy, you know, opening first week of the season. On Monday, he closes, and then on Thursday, you see him pitching long relief. That's when you didn't do a good job in spring training. You're just putting stuff together, having a set plan, because that way you set culture, you have a set plan, and then you can make easier adjustments later on.
I love it.
I'm going to end the show on my expectation as we wrap it up. Essentially last season, my expectation was that they would figure out for the long term what the catching situation is going to be, which is one of the most important positions going forward up the middle of the diamond. And I think that they've known both individuals by now and seen production as is. My expectation is by the time camp breaks, Kyle Teal has been extended. That is what I want to see moving forward. Wow. And that is my expectation.
Your expectation is going to be broken and destroyed.
Wow.
No.
Can you?
We'll react this going forward, but thank you for watching The Blackout.
No. Lord.